This is Biz. I'm a part-time working mom with two full-blown kids.
And I'm Teresa. I have a family business, two young kids, and a toddler.
This is a show about life after giving life. Don't listen with your kids, because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, apologies. Plus, Biz is worried, Teresa solves a problem, and we welcome back Allie Harper, founder of Our Shelves.
Woo!
Woo!
Teresa?
Yes.
Before I ask you how you are.
Okay.
I have to make sure that everybody remembers.
Yeah.
New merch.
The merch, you guys. Seriously.
In the store.
I cannot emphasize enough the new merch.
I am a self.
It's so good, you
t-shirt.
Guys. This is what everybody should have for the holidays.
I agree. We should just wear
it. It's so good. We should all be wearing them all the time.
Even if it's just nuzzled under a holiday sweater and you're in there like washing dishes for like a holiday, it's Christmas morning or it's during Hanukkah or it's during one of the 8 million reasons people are in your house making a mess and you're supposed to stay happy, but like close
inside.
To your skin.
Yes.
It says I am
you
a self.
You know you're a self. I feel like in contrast to the Haggard and Broken tea, which is also a great tea.
Oh, it's a good one.
That one I wear when I'm in a particular place.
Yes.
And it's really good for that place. It's really gratifying when I'm in that place. The I am a self tea, I feel like, is good for all places.
Yeah.
It meets you where you're at.
Right.
You're having rough day, you wear the shirt. You're having a good day, you wear the shirt. It's like all the days can have this shirt.
It is a good shirt. You can always cover that shirt up when you need to with a One Bad Mother hoodie.
Yeah.
That's finally arrived.
Yes.
And there is a bumper sticker that says, honk if you're doing it, which I am so excited that our show gets to have one of those bumper stickers that's like, you know, golfers, you know,
ass,
do it in the putt
or
what?
Nobody.
Yeah. Do it in the putt. So I am very excited. That's a great stocking stuffer.
Yeah.
So go over to
maxfunstore.com.
Teresa?
Yes.
How are you?
I am a little haggard and broken today.
Oh.
We traveled for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I just cleaned my car on the way here because it was so filthy and disgusting that I actually skipped my own shower today so that I would have time to clean my car because it was so disgusting. I'm very tired.
Mm.
We were healthy on the trip, which was great.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it was just like sleep disruptions every night and just like stuff being crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Just like traveling with three kids. And one of the hardest things was that my 6-year-old, Oscar, gets really homesick when we're not home.
Oh, but like even with you, it's not
even
like
with me.
It's like
he wants,
literally the house.
Yeah. He's homesick for me at other points.
Right.
But like when we go on trips, pretty much, like, he's excited to go on the trip usually, but within 24 hours of getting to the place that we've gone, he always wants to go home. And it's really, really hard for him.
Yeah.
And on this particular trip, it was like that times 1,000. Like, I don't know what was going on with him, but it was really, really rough. Like, to the point where, and we were dog sitting for some friends of ours. That's where we were staying. And the house was really nice, and the dog was really sweet, and we were comfortable, and we had space. And it was, he was like following me around everywhere, like dragging his body on my body.
Wow.
Like at all. It was so exhausting.
Wow.
And I kind of fixed it though.
Oh.
And I was like, how do I talk about this? Because it's controversial.
Okay.
I bought him a Lego set, like a medium sized like Lego set from the toy store down the hill. And the reason I did that was not to be like, oh, you're sad, here's some toys. But I just could tell that like the thing he was really missing was he really likes to have his time at home where he kind of goes to his space and he has his little things and he builds with his Legos and he does his like imaginary games, and that is like a very regulating thing for him and like a very comforting thing for him, and he does it every day, usually more than once a day. And so when we're traveling, he doesn't have that. Even if he brings a few Legos, which he did, it's like not the same because he doesn't have his space or his setup. And I just I said to Jesse, I really think we need to do this. And he was like, okay. You know, that kind of like, sure, like kind of thing. And I just thought, I just know that this is going to help him. And it totally did.
Like, damn straight.
Yeah. Like the whole rest of the trip. I mean, he did ask, like, when are we going? You know, he wanted to know when we were going home. But he also spent lots of time just sitting at that dining room table playing with his new Legos and being, like, totally calm and, comfortable. So it was a game changer.
Nice.
And I felt good about that.
I think you did a great job.
Thank you. Ooh. How are you?
You know, worry is a funny thing where, you know, you don't have all the facts about something and you're not going to get them till like a certain day.
Okay.
And then so you're like, well, there should be no need to worry per se because I don't know. What's happening is about a week and a half ago, Ella started like having extreme thirst, like all night, like couldn't sleep because he was going through like 4 or 5 of his, like, sippy cups of, like, water. Like, couldn't sleep, would wake up thirsty. And, of course, that means you got to pee.
Right.
And then, like, during the day, he was drinking a lot more. And so, apparently, that's a thing. That's, like, a warning sign of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, we're going to the doctor tomorrow.
Yeah.
But there's, like, a whole weekend of, you know, you just do the fucking Google search, and then you're like, okay, these are the different situations it could be. All of them, if it's not just a random thing, pretty big life changers and game changers. And I'm just like, I was telling Stefan, I just said to him, you know what? I usually don't express my worry to Stefan because he's very logical and is like, well, we won't know. But I said, I tell you, I'm a little worried.
Yeah.
If this is indicative of something like type 1 diabetes, that's a real, that's going to be a lot.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to be a lot for Ellis. It's going to be a lot for us.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot. And, you know, I just was like, and I'm worried, even though I have no control over any of it right now.
Right.
And I've done everything I can do.
Yes.
Which is make an appointment.
Yeah.
Right? And so I just was like, and I told him, I said, I know my logical mind's like, everything's okay till you know it's not. Right?
Right.
Like, but then there's the other one where I'm like,
you're going to think through scenarios.
Yeah. I just am like, I hate the thinking through scenarios because that's not helpful. I mean, I guess it could be helpful a little as preparation.
Yeah.
But like, there are a lot of times I've gone in with the, I've thought through all the worst case scenarios, and it's absolutely not.
Yeah.
And then I always feel like weird about it. I'm like, why did I spend all that time worrying about it?
I know.
And yeah, I don't know. I'm just like.
So you're taking him this afternoon?
Yeah, no, tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow
morning. So tomorrow morning. It's times out with this physical.
Oh.
So we're just going to do it all at once. Yeah. So worry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't like, we don't talk about it enough on the show.
Are you being serious or sarcastic?
Okay. I'm being sarcastic.
Yes, that's pretty much our main thing, right?
Is worrying. Yeah, but I feel like sometimes worry, we try and like counter it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think maybe we don't say enough. Sometimes you have to just succumb to the worrying for a little while.
Yeah.
Because you can't do anything else.
I think it's also one of those things like emotions where like the more you fight it, the more stressed out it makes you and worked up about it. So sometimes if you just like let those worries flow, it kind of runs its course.
Yeah.
You know?
Sort of like Ellis's bladder these days.
Yeah.
It's running its course. A lot.
Taking fluid in, letting fluid out.
Look at how your body works. In with the new, out with the old.
Well, I will be thinking of you and Ellis tomorrow, and I hope it's nothing.
I hope it's just weird stuff.
Yeah.
Weird 5-6-year-old stuff.
Dryness.
Just weird dryness.
Very dry here.
That is true. Yeah. I am really hoping for that.
Yeah.
But if my worrying has caused anyone else to worry, I apologize, which ties in nicely to what we're going to talk about today. Which is apologies.
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa.
Yes.
I'm sorry, so sorry. I won't go into the song.
Okay. I was enjoying it. I felt like
I was such a fool. I didn't know that love could be so cruel. You can't start a Patsy Cline song and not finish a Patsy.
Okay.
So you're all welcome or I'm sorry. Apologies.
Yes.
I did not know there was going to be a lot of feelings about apologies.
Yeah.
When I had kids.
Yeah.
I was really under the impression before kids that if you hurt someone's feelings or physically harm them in some way or just do anything that is not nice, you apologize.
Right.
I thought that was a good rule.
Yeah.
Now I have learned that some people feel differently.
Right.
And that is a surprise. So I want to start off talking about like kids and apologies.
Yeah.
And I just want to help me. I'll just, I have raised the kids from birth. I mean, if they even step on the cat, I'm like, I need you to apologize to the cat because I just want to emphasize. And you guys have heard me on the show. I will be the first to apologize if I have said or done something wrong.
Yes.
You know, it is.
And not a bullshit apology.
And not a bullshit apology.
Not if I apologize if I hurt you.
No, it's like, I'm sorry I hurt you.
I'm really sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if it's just one listener, I'm like, I hear you and I'm sorry. Yes. That wasn't my intention.
Yes.
And
Oops.
Yeah. And thanks for letting me know so I can fix that.
Yes.
Because just like for my children, I want to know that I can be responsible for my actions, that I can be wrong, and that it's okay, and that I can learn from something.
Mm-hmm.
And that acknowledging other people's experiences feels good.
Yes.
Right? So I think apologies, A-okay.
Yeah.
Katie Bell goes to a school where they don't apologize when there's an incident.
Talk about the rationale of that. Like what they...
You
don't know what it is?
I don't really understand it.
Okay.
Because I feel like... I mean, I've read the policy.
Okay.
And it's very much about like working... I feel like if I understand it correctly, it's about trying to avoid the idea of a meaningless apology.
Yeah.
That if two kids have an interaction, what's more important is talking it out and getting a better understanding of what happened versus just saying you're sorry and walking on.
Yes.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
But I want there to be a combo of that.
Yeah.
And like, it was really hard for Ellis in his first couple of weeks of kindergarten when people weren't saying, I'm sorry. And Katie Bell, too, just was really having, like, no one said they were sorry. And I was like, I'm sorry.
A clarification on that, though. Do they not do apologies or do they not make a kid say they're sorry?
I guess
do you know
that
what
they
I'm
don't
saying?
Make, say you're sorry. They don't make
They don't say,
them.
Like, you need to apologize. Yeah.
Yes. However, I feel like, how do kids learn to apologize?
No, I know. No,
I feel
totally.
Like I get the whole, like, the tediousness and, like, the sometimes the meaningless feeling of, like, making small children say you're sorry.
Yeah.
You say you're sorry.
Yeah.
And no kid knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I think that's the same thing as manners and everything else, where
totally.
It's just about repetition and practice.
Yeah.
And one day it will hold meaning if you are supporting it with these things.
Yeah.
So that's where I am with the surprise of children and apologies.
Yeah.
Where are you?
Yeah, I hear all of that. I think I probably fall like a little more on the side of there might be other things that are more important with kids to get out of a conflict than the practice of saying I'm sorry. Like, I can see how there might be value in, if there's a conflict between two kids, like focusing on some other aspects of reconciliation aside from just teaching kids that you should say I'm sorry. Like, right. So I can kind of get that part of it. That being said, I also think that apologies are really important, real ones.
Yeah.
I just think, like, there is this way that I was taught to say sorry as a kid, or that I remember especially at school apologies being, where it was just like, say you're sorry, and it's like, sorry, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And like,
they just go back to punching you in the knee. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I remember a friend of mine who was like, who had like their kid at a particular school, and I was like thinking about that school for one of my kids, and they were like, you know, they really are working on getting better with their like conflict resolution practices, but like, we've had so much trouble with basically like really bad things happening, like bullying type things. And then they would just have the kids come to the table and then just say they were sorry. And that was it.
Yeah.
And like it. So it's really, I think it's like, it's really all of it, right? Like it's really like, because what I've noticed I do with my kids is I do have them say they're sorry, but my first impulse is not saying you're sorry. It's usually ask them if they're okay. Mm-hmm. Are they okay? Check on them. Yeah. Are they okay? What do they need? Ask them what they need. So it's like, it's kind of like focusing on that part first. Mm. So like, just like small conflicts around the house, it's usually like Curtis will take something, like take Oscar's Legos, and then Oscar will get mad and hit him, and Curtis will fall over.
Right.
And then Curtis will be crying, and Oscar will say like, Mom, I did a, you know. And so I'll be like, quick, pick him up. Is he okay? Ask him how he's doing. Check on him. You know, like, and just kind of focusing on the caring, like caring for the other person and seeing what they need first and foremost.
Oh, yeah.
And then like after that, it's like making sure everybody gets their chance to be heard. Like, does Curtis want to say what happened? You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. So that there's a meaningful exchange about what happened. And then if they do have a meaningful exchange and they're okay, I don't necessarily need Oscar to say, I'm sorry. He usually does.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily need him to. You know, like, I think it's more important that he is remorseful and shows care and tries to make it better somehow. Like, we focus a lot on, like, how can you make it better? Like, is there a Lego you can share with him? Is, you know, what does he need? Does he need a Band-Aid? You know, whatever.
Right. What do you do with Curtis for initiating this crisis? No, but seriously, like, I loved all of that. Are you simultaneously trying to help Curtis, who's really young, and I know developmentally he's still, but is there a place there for that understanding?
I know. Think it's inherent. Like, you took this and you got hit.
Okay.
So I think he already learned that lesson.
Cause, effect.
Yeah, like, I think, and like, I do focus on, since he's, like, it would be different if it's between Grace and Oscar.
Yeah.
But, like, between Oscar and Curtis, they're 3 years and 3 months apart, and Curtis is not yet three, and, like, the impulse control is just not, like, he just, and so I do focus a lot on, with Oscar, like, that is so frustrating, and I will help you get that Lego back. Like, I'm here for you. Because that's so frustrating. But we can't hit. Like, period.
Yeah.
We can't hit. So I do try to give Oscar that, like, on repetition, that understanding of, like, it's not okay that he took your Lego.
Right.
Like, it's not okay. But he's not doing that, like, maliciously. He's just two. Like, that's just...
Yeah.
And it's the same for... My older kids also have impulse control problems.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's that understand... It's not just with a two-year-old. It's that understanding of, like, okay, that was not fun. We totally see how not fun that was.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like a million little decisions that we're all making at every moment. But like in those moments, I can see how making someone say they're sorry in that moment is like maybe a little less helpful than like walking through that process, like the other things that are going on in that moment.
What's great is that you're teaching them what an apology means.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, because no one likes empty apologies.
Right. Yeah.
They need to understand how to apologize is to understand empathy, to understand mistakes, to understand forgiveness.
Yeah.
And if you aren't backing up those different sort of qualities and parts of it.
Yeah.
Then it's like when my kids, sometimes stuff will happen and, you know, Kate will be like, I want an apology to Ellis, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll be like, Ellis, you know, do you understand? We go through the hall, like, oh, you should have done that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I'm skipping to the apology part. And Ellis will be like, sorry.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, okay, let me tell you how apologies work.
Yeah.
You need to make eye contact, and then you need to say it to the person, right? And then that takes forever,
right?
Right? I'm saying, hey, fucking just look at her. Look at her. And then to, like, Katie Bell, I'll have to be like, you also need to look, but without a stink face.
Right.
Be receptive to the apology.
Yeah.
It's not like he's given you a dollar for a service.
Yeah.
This is, if you want an apology, prepare to accept an apology. And then you need to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Right?
And then, like, move on.
And then move on.
Yeah.
And then everybody has to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot. I think apologies are, like, very easy to look at as just a simple one-dimensional transaction.
Yes.
And if you don't get them, then you have been wronged and shamed.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, all these intricacies and nuances of really taking responsibility for your mistake and taking responsibility for your ability to forgive.
Oh, totally.
And, you know, and accept the apology. Oh, there is. I will. Oh, I'm going to shift to that.
Okay.
There's nothing. I find that really frustrating when I watch even grown adults demand an apology or just, you know, point out that something is bullshit, something bullshit happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who did such said bullshit come back and apologize, but they just don't want any part of it.
Mm.
And I feel like that's,
they just want to be mad.
Yeah, they just want to be mad.
Yeah.
And but that's different than acknowledging this person who's trying to change or admit their wrongness.
Yeah.
There is a difference between us just wanting to be mad and be stinky about something because of a million emotional attachments to whatever it is that happened.
Yeah.
Versus whatever's happening in this individual moment of the wrong and the righting of the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That always makes me want to go, well, you don't deserve an apology. Mm-hmm. If you're not ready to move on past it, what is the point of the apology? And I've had that conversation with Katie Bell.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to apologize, but or your friend's going to apologize. Or if you want your friend to apologize for something, are you ready to let it go when they do? Like, what are you trying to get? What do you need emotionally from that apology?
Well, I think that's a really interesting concept, right? Because I think the idea that an apology might not be enough kind of gets at this other work that we're trying to do with them, where we're trying to make it genuine enough, meaningful enough.
Yeah.
And I think, like, give the person who's upset a chance to say what they need to say might even be more important. Like, I'm thinking about a fight that I had with Jesse yesterday, and it was, like, on text message because he wasn't there and the kids were there and I wasn't going to call him and scream F words into the phone. So I typed a million F words into my phone.
Ooh.
And I think now my phone finally understands that when I type fuck, I don't mean duck.
You don't mean duck.
And when I type fucking, I don't mean ducking.
Huh.
And when I type fucked, I don't mean ducked.
Way to learn, AI.
Good job.
Keep learning.
Yeah. And so, like, I was so mad. You know, it took a little time for him to respond, probably because he had to, like, calm down.
Take a breath.
Before responding in an equally intense manner. And he did apologize. And, like, I'm thinking right now, it was a genuine apology. And I was grateful for his apology because I could tell it was genuine and that he heard me.
Mm-hmm.
But I still wasn't over it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted more. I, like, had more to say.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I had. And so, like, it's just going to take a couple of, like, was better later yesterday.
Yeah.
It's better today. But it's, like, it's going to take some time. And so, do you know what I mean?
No.
To, like, and some more opportunities to actually interact and, like, clear the air on what those things were. And I feel like it's the same with kids, right? Like, not hopefully not with all those F words.
Sure. But I do want fucking right.
But saying you're sorry cuts it off. I feel like in a way that's unfair is what I was going to say. Like if you if somebody's really upset and you're just like, I'm really sorry. It's a little bit like, well, thanks. Like, but that's kind of, in a way, it's kind of easy to say you're sorry. Like,
that's
kind of do something else, or like give me, or like really give me a chance to talk, or like really offer to make amends somehow. Like,
yeah, I think the difference between what you're saying and what I was saying with the like, I'm just gonna be stinky mad and I don't give two shits, right, about your apology, is the being able to vocalize that, because you can be. It's the old like, you know, my partner, my friends, you know, never get me anything that I want, or they don't know what to say because they can't read your mind. And so you can walk around mad that no one's giving you what you want or saying what you want because they can't read your mind, which is totally something you've created for yourself.
Yeah.
Took me years to figure that out, and I'm still working on it myself. But the when it comes to the I'm mad and I'm not going to listen to your apology versus I'm mad, I hear your apology, but I'm going to need more, whether that be time, whether that be interactions. I don't need, like, Stefan and I have gone through this before, too, where he's done stuff. And I'm like, listen, I hear that you're sorry, and I do appreciate that. I'm still bent out of shape.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be bent out of shape for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't need you to, like, follow me around apologizing, because that will irritate the shit out of me, but I want you to be respectful of my irritation. And at times, I may need you to communicate that you still understand why I'm upset.
Yeah.
Just it's that need to be heard.
Yeah.
And like understood. Not all interactions are about that.
Yeah.
But that is one interaction. Yeah. And I, which then leads us to what example are we setting?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the example is not only apologizing. And we've talked about apologizing to our kids for, like, losing our temper or, like, forgetting to do something, as well as following up with them later. So I think that's, like, one good example. But I think with how you interact, I have consistently told my children, oh, I messed up today. I hurt somebody's feelings or somebody reached out to let me know that that wasn't okay. And so, you know, I'm constantly trying to remind them that apologies and understanding why you need to apologize and the benefits of that for yourself and for others, like why that's important. Yeah, I mean, because even with my kids, they've done stuff to me sometimes and they've realized right away it was the wrong thing to do and they apologize, but I ain't ready to move on because it hurt. Like, well, it either physically hurt or it hurt my feelings. Yeah. And, like, I think with kids, it's, like, almost even harder because you're just giving. I mean, everything we've just talked about is, like, emotional labor that we're doing all the time.
Yes.
One of many things we are sacrificing of who we are to help raise reasonable people in the world, right? So we're tired and we're exhausted and underappreciated feeling. And then they like bite you or step on you or say something really rude.
Yeah.
And you say, I don't like that. That's not okay. And they apologize and they're upset because they hate to see you. That's scary when you're upset.
Yeah.
But they apologize. And I can hear it in little Ellis's voice that he means it.
Yeah.
I don't give two shits. I am so mad.
I know.
I'm still so mad.
I know.
And that's not something that a little kid can understand. You can't say the same thing you would say to your partner.
Right.
I'm still been out of shape. You have to like move on.
Yeah. We have to like
take
some responsibility for who they are and who we are and what the dynamic is in that parent-child relationship and just.
But I think that's a good lesson for ourselves if I'm pointing out lessons.
Mm-hmm.
If you can learn to accept an apology, understand where it's coming from, and then make yourself move on past it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
It's two sides. There's two parts to apologies.
Yeah. I'm curious about like when kids apologize or people apologize for things that they don't shouldn't really be apologizing for or don't need to apologize for. Like, we're going through this thing with Gracie right now.
Yes.
Where, like, she'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry, Mommy. I like she feels that she's done a bad job about something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't need to apologize. Like, that's totally fine. Like, yesterday we were working on a craft.
Who are you?
I know.
Broken.
Yeah. So broken by Sunday after Thanksgiving. And I was working on a craft with her, and there was, like, some sewing to it. Uh-huh. And she's just kind of learning to sew, and it's hard. And there were parts where, like, we were just troubleshooting little things that are normal things when you're sewing. Like, you're kind of always troubleshooting little things. And with every little thing, she'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Or, like, if I had to do something, she'd be like, I'm sorry you're having to do so much of this. I'm like, you don't need to apologize. Like,
oh, it angers you.
I was like, no, I was.
It makes me angry.
It didn't anger me. It was just like, I was just like, wow. Like, do you really think you need to be that perfect? Like, you're so apologetic for not already being perfect at this. And we're learning how to do it right now. Like, you're not expected to. And I think that's a hard one. And it reminded me of when I must have been in, like, fourth grade or something. I went through this phase. I remember my mom telling me I was going through a phase where I was saying I'm sorry to everything. And she just told me at one point, I don't want to hear you say that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, do something. Do something else. Like, do a different thing. Don't just say I'm sorry. Like, do something. And it's not exactly the same as with Gracie, but it's almost like this cop-out. Like, I suck. I suck. Okay, just forget me. I'm terrible. Like, I'm...
No, I think
can't
it is
do
the
anything.
Same.
It's
because,
like,
Katie Bell does this.
Oh, okay.
Katie Bell apologizes for everything. Mm. So, Katie Bell, can you please put your... Like, right now we're working on, like, you can't just leave your plate or your snack, but whatever.
Yeah.
Just normal.
Clear
we
place.
All live in a house.
Yeah.
Katie Bell, can you get your plate? Oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like,
and like
no, just
no,
get it.
Just get
just
it.
Just get it.
Yeah.
You haven't done anything to anyone.
Yeah.
I need you to get it. Or, you know... Yeah, which then makes me feel like, because it's the same as all the same examples of what Grace is doing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She apologizes for fucking everything, and it makes me mad, and like, or maybe not like you, I'm like, where is this coming from? You know, is that a meaningful apology? How does that affect really apologizing and understanding when we've done something wrong? Like, what the difference is between harming someone and just needing to get something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I then worry, oh my God, are we doing something? Are we saying, or is somebody else saying something to her? The fear of perfection, like anxiety.
Yeah.
So maybe, actually, it makes me feel good to hear that, like, your mom reminded you of similar.
Yeah.
Like, it really could be something that is a phase.
Yeah, just a phase, yeah.
But we do the same thing where we're just like, this is not something you need to apologize for. Just do it.
Just
or say,
fix it.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
You know, yes, ma'am is supposed to be your blanket.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Of course I know I'm supposed to go do that. Like that, just say yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Or yes.
It's a little bit, I feel like it's also a little bit of like a defense mechanism, like to avoid somebody criticizing you.
Ooh.
You're just like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, oh, I'm sorry. And it's like, no.
No.
Just if I'm correcting you about something or asking you to do something,
you're not in trouble.
Yeah. I'm not saying there's something wrong with you as a human. Just like figure it out.
Figure it out. Do something different and apologize for apologizing to me. Ah. One Bad Mother is supported in part by iDTech. I would love my child to have a positive, healthy, and actual educational experience on new technology versus just spending all their time in chat rooms. Do people still go on chat rooms? Maybe I'm not the best person to help my child.
Whether your kids are interested in coding, video game development, robotics, or video production, iDTech can help your child build the STEM skills employers are looking for.
iDTech has programs at 150 prestigious campus destinations worldwide, from Caltech and NYU to Cambridge and the University of Hong Kong. There are courses for all skill levels.
So nurture their interests now with help from ID Tech. Visit idtech.com/badmother today to reserve your child's spot and receive $75 off. This is a great gift for the holidays. That's idtech.com/badmother for $75 off. idtech.com/badmother. Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Genius fail time, Teresa. Genius meme.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
Oh, my God. Seriously, I have a really good genius. This is like superhero level genius.
Yes.
So we were at a playground in Oakland where we were staying over the break. And there was like this old timey kind of carriage, like metal carriage that kids could climb on. I'm not sure if it's just a play structure or was actually a carriage at some point or made to just look like a carriage. But it was about the size of a carriage. And Grace, as Grace does, climbs immediately onto the top of the carriage. And there's a little railing around the top that makes you think it's probably okay for a kid to be on top of the carriage, like maybe. And so she's up there playing and the other kids are playing and blah, blah, blah. And then it's time to go. And everything is wet and slippery and she's wearing rain boots. And she starts to step down and she thinks she's just not being careful, and she thinks that she's stepping on a flat surface, but she's stepping on a curved surface, and she truly flips her entire body head down to where her head is falling, and I caught her around the waist as she was falling off the carriage before she hit the ground. I caught her. Caught her midair, mid-fall, head first off of this carriage.
Wow.
Like, Jesse was there. He was like, that was amazing. Like, it was like, it was totally amazing.
Yes.
And she was fine.
Yeah. That's incredible.
It was incredible.
You, Mom, are a super mom.
Thank you.
That's amazing. Okay. So this is just one of those, like, you need those moments where you feel like I'm doing a good job.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing something really right.
Yes.
So, you know, both of my children, a lot of flatulence. Mm. They always have.
Of course.
Spoken about on the show. It's now Ellis's season to shine.
Oh, good.
I have equally done the, like, it's your superpower. Don't be ashamed of it. You know, if you're going to do it, if you can't control it, you might as well embrace it.
Yep.
I don't know where this has come from, but lately he'll say, I pooted.
Uh-huh.
It's fresh off the butt. And that is the funniest thing I've ever heard. It is so funny. But so he's saying that this morning, and he and Katie Bell are both doing like a bunch of just weird ass shit to each other. Like it goes from that to like something else weird to like voices and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, get in the car. We all get in the car. And then they both make these very like confident sort of statements about, you know, how being a weirdo is a really good thing.
Uh-huh.
And I just sat down car and I turned around and I said, you're right.
Yeah.
Being a weirdo is great. And just hearing you say that makes me feel like I'm doing okay.
Yeah. I think it's so great.
I do too. I just am like,
they're proud.
They're proud that they're just being a weirdo.
Yeah.
Just be a weirdo.
I love it.
I know. I love it too.
It's
it made
great.
Me like really happy.
Good. Good job.
Thank you.
Hi, One Bad Mother. I'm calling with a genius. My daughter is not quite 3 yet, but being pregnant and breastfeeding, I don't know, my hormones went bonkers, and I've got lots of hair, and car tweezers is my genius. I have a pair of tweezers in my car because usually it's when I'm in my car that I touch my chin and I find these bristly, awful feeling hairs that I can't stand. thank you, pregnancy and everything. So I left a pair of tweezers in my car, and now I can take care of them wherever. So that is all. It's the joys of motherhood, right? But thanks, you're doing a good job, too.
This is so great. Yes. I love how by the end of the call, she's like, is this even anything worth? Oh, well, I've already shared it.
I love anything where somebody's just like, car tweezers.
Yes.
That's my trademark.
So good. Yes.
I love
it's
it.
So good.
Yeah. I also like the reminder that pregnancy does insane things to your body.
Yes.
You seem to have a reasonable sense of humor about it.
Yep.
Which I think is the real genius.
Yes.
And kudos to car tweezers. Anything we can put in our surrounding area that makes our life easier is a win.
Really?
Really.
Yeah.
Good job.
Good job.
Failures.
Fail. 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 Fail!
You suck.
Fail me, Teresa.
I picked up dog poop with my bare hands because it was in the house and it was a tiny piece and it was kind of dark and I couldn't see what it was and it was in the toy area and I just got closer and closer and picked it up and then I went, oh, this is dog poop.
Yeah. In your hand.
In my hand.
Like touching
like
it.
Like already touching in it. My hand by the time I knew it was in my hand.
Did you just want to make extra sure? Did you give it the sniff?
No.
Oh.
No, I knew.
Huh.
By the time it was in my hand, I knew.
You knew.
Yeah.
Little squeeze. So gross. You are barely a person.
I know.
I am so excited to share this fail. This may be one of the greatest fails I've done. It is particularly poignant as I am Team Banana. So Ellis, this weekend, says, I'm hungry. Stefan says, would you like a banana? He says, okay. We give him the banana. And we peel. Stefan peels like at about halfway down, gives him the banana, and he eats most of the banana. And then he says, I'm done. And I'm also still hungry. And Stefan and I both go, well, why don't you finish the banana? Mm-hmm. And we slowly peel more of the banana down. And he goes, there's more banana. And we're like, yeah. There's more banana if you keep peeling. And then he's like, okay, now I'm done. And we're like, but there's still like a more banana. Yeah. He goes, no, there's not. And then we peel it all. And he goes, what? What? He's so truly surprised. Yeah. And we all of us look at each other and we're like, did Ellis just learn that there's more banana if you keep... Have we some...
Yeah. He's been eating half a banana
his whole life. He has truly been eating half a banana. And I've always just thought, hey, he's done with the banana. Yeah. But now I know it's because he didn't understand...
That there was more banana. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. What a wonderful surprise for Ellis.
Hi, One Bad Mother. I'm calling with a fail. I'm not totally sure how it's a fail, but it definitely feels like fail. So, I was playing with my kid. He's 21 months or whatever it is now. He'll be 2 in January. And he was rolling around on the ground and giggling and playing. And he came up to me and looked like he wanted a kiss. And I thought, that's interesting. But okay, because it was really cute. And obviously, I'm going to give my kid a kiss. So he came up to me, kind of open mouth. And instead of giving me a kiss, he licked my lip. And I thought that was hilarious and probably not something he should do. But okay, so I was laughing. And he was laughing and he ran away. And then I realized I had something in my mouth. So I figure it out, get it out. It's a cat nail. My kid had a cat nail in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he used my mouth to put the cat nail in. So not only, I guess, is my rug really dirty that he was rolling around on, but he now thinks that the way to get rid of things that he doesn't want in his mouth is to put them directly into my mouth. Mm. So it feels like a fail. So thanks for the show. You're doing a great job. Not so much.
Yeah, no, it's a fail.
Yeah.
That's I mean, that's like one of those, like, I was once a human being fails. Like, it's like, I'm having a great day. Yeah. I got a brand new hat. And a bird shits on it. And you're like, oh, everything's the worst. Yeah. Having your kid kiss you and deposit a cat toenail in your mouth isn't a good feeling.
No.
Like a little squirrel passing on nuts for the winter. Yeah, no. It's like a just a weird, sad day. Can't share that with anybody.
Except us.
Except us. Yeah. I'm like, you're still a person.
Yeah.
I'd still totally talk to you.
We love hearing it.
We love hearing it, and we love you.
Yeah.
But everybody else in the world would probably, like, take a step aside.
Woo!
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you. I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone. I love you. I love you.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Care.com.
It's the holidays. It's like everything you have to do just got tripled. Why not ask for a little extra help with Care.com to help you handle all those everyday tasks from dog walking, cleaning, and who doesn't need a babysitter over the holidays?
Care.com is the world's largest digital marketplace for finding and managing family care. At Care.com, you can find care for everyone in the family, whether you need childcare while you're at work or you want to line up a date night sitter, Care.com is there for you. Join for free as a basic member and start searching for great local caregivers. Once you upgrade to premium membership, you can reach out to them, schedule interviews, and even book and pay for care online or through our app.
To save 30% off a Care.com premium membership, visit care.com/mother or enter promo code MOTHER when you subscribe. Hey, Teresa, let's call someone today. This week, we are welcoming back Allie Harper, she, her, hers. She is a social justice attorney and community organizer. She served as president of the ACLU of Maryland during the marriage equality efforts, as well as on the boards of the ACLU of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Maine. Allie is the founder of Our Shelves, a diverse children's book box service and advocacy effort. She was also previously here on One Bad Mother on episode 282. Welcome back, Allie.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me back.
We're excited. And we'll tell everybody why we're excited in just a little bit. But first, I want to ask you what we've asked you before. Who lives in your house?
Well, there's me, Allie, my wife, Jen, and our daughter, Anna, who's now 6, actually almost 7. And then our newest little one, Isaac, who is not yet born, last time we spoke, but who turns 1 tomorrow, actually.
Oh, my gosh. What? Happy birthday,
Isaac. So it
was Isaac.
Like exactly it was, a year ago or
yeah.
so.
It was.
Yeah.
Let's just, maybe we should or shouldn't have you on once a year, just depending on how.
Is your family complete?
Yeah, if you're good, then we'll stop calling. That is so exciting. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we are doing great. You know, it's been quite a year. It's no joke. It's been quite a year.
Yeah, it sounds like quite
a really special year.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Because I have a just turned 6-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I know that 7 is something. So.
Oh, good. That's good to know. We're entering, she turns 7 next month, and you know, between her turning 7 and Isaac turning 1, it is just, you know, parenting is amazing and humbling, very humbling.
Is humbling code for painful and sometimes shitty? Because I agree to the humbling.
It might be. You're a good translator.
Little bit of A, little bit of B. Please remind everybody about what Our Shelves is and does and why you created it.
So in terms of why we created it, our 2 kids have 2 moms. And we were surprised when we had our oldest almost 7 years ago that when we had her, we started asking around for recommendations for high-quality, age-appropriate kids' books that featured two-mom families like ours. We were really surprised at how hard these books were to find. And the second observation we had was that there are just not enough high-quality, diverse kids' books, period. So our shelves stemmed from those two observations. And so we launched our shelves with a dual mission. And the dual mission is on the front of there are these high-quality existing books that are hard to find. Our mission is to connect those books to those seeking them. So the families, the teachers, librarians, we've assembled an incredible curation team who really help to find these books that can be hard to find, but then also really critically review them. And then our shelves delivers them to our members through either one-time gift boxes or a subscription service. So that's the first part of the mission. But the second part of the mission that goes to there just aren't enough high-quality, diverse books, period, is the advocacy part of our mission, which is that we really need to advocate for the many more diverse books still needed.
Well, let's talk about the advocacy effort. I would love to learn more about that.
So the advocacy part of our mission has two parts. One aspect of it is that we are constantly asking our members and supporters who are still missing on their shelves in terms of which identities are missing and what kinds of stories are missing. And then we collect that information and aggregate it and share it with publishers. So that's the first piece, is we're trying to share with publishers what everyday families, teachers, librarians, what we feel are missing on our shelves. And then the second piece of the advocacy is that we're trying to prove the really significant audience that exists for these books. And I can share more about the actual data. At first, this is just kind of an anecdotal sense of, you know, everyone in our world across the country, our friends and families, were looking for these books, and yet they were having a hard time finding them. But now we've done the research, and we know that there are millions and millions of people actually seeking these books. So part of what we're trying to do is also prove this really large, significant audience for these books that we think is currently underestimated. So when people subscribe to our shelves and buy diverse book boxes, they're not only connecting these wonderful books to their kids and cultivating their inclusive values, but they're also being counted as part of the large market demand for these books, which we think is really important so that publishers kind of move away from perceiving increased risk when creating these books to actually perceiving all the opportunity that exists when creating these books. So we want to be able to go to publishers and say, not just, oh, you know, did you know that there are very few books with main characters with two moms?
did you know people who are making a conscious choice to not publish such things? Are you aware?
So we want to point out, you know, do the educating of there actually aren't many of these books being published by major American publishers. So first point that out, but then also to be able to then say, will you produce more of them? And not just will you create more of them, but when you do, we are going to be here to buy them in significant numbers.
Yeah.
So that way, again, they perceive opportunity instead of risk when creating them.
I got to tell you, that's like the idea that you might not be aware, or that you think there actually is. The only way I can conceive that that happens is that you see one or two books that have diverse characters and all that stuff in your like parents like review section, book section in the magazine or family circle, and you're like all done, while like I must have 20 books featuring like bears in pants that need to like figure out how to like wake up. Right. And I'm like they're like, and then I also have bunnies and I have like frogs and I have like all like so many. And I'm just like that. I mean, because I'm still surprised. Like I am still like when I get a book and I see diverse characters in it, like, for example, right now, Ellis's teacher has been reading to the class this like chapter book, a very small chapter book series called Zoe and Sassafras. And I really like saying the name Sassafras. It's a cat. And it focuses on science, but the main character is African American. But it's like, that's not mentioned at all, except the pictures in the book indicate that, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And I remember thinking, look how easy that was. Like, that's easy.
Yeah. Well, and also I seem to remember last time you were on the show, Allie, you pointing out that books like that mm-hmm. are sometimes hard to search for because it doesn't make a big deal out of the fact that it's just a book with a diverse cast of characters and it's just a great book.
you can't search up.
And so, I mean, sometimes there are lists of, you know, books, you know, books that are like this, but you're sort of, it's not systematic. It's not like you can't just type into the internet what you want and have it all show up there.
Right. Well, and I guess part of the goal is to make it so we never have to do searches anymore, because every book offers some sort of diversity in it eventually.
That would be nice.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be very nice.
Well, I wanted to give, before I get into more questions, I wanted to toot some horns related to you.
Toot away.
I'm a toot because, pardon me, tooting. We're all 12 years old. We were so excited to have you on the last time because it was such a like, oh, look how, great that is.
Yeah.
And what an easy way for all of us to like participate in advocacy as well as to
like
get this
and
to stand up and be counted and do something cool, right? Like I can start a subscription, right? Yeah. Like that's, and I'm getting something out of it. And not only did I learn that Teresa's book is about to be included in an Our Shelves subscription. So let me encourage our listeners, if you haven't started a subscription, let's start it now. But also that One Bad Mother listeners were some of the biggest subscribers to your subscription.
That is so true. It is absolutely incredible. So after I was on your podcast last year, so many of your listeners signed up for Our Shelves. And it's been incredible because over time, as I communicate with different members, when I'm communicating, they write giving positive feedback or they write, you know, asking questions. And I say, how did you learn about ourselves? And so many people say One Bad Mother. And what's incredible about this great group of people is not only are they completely supportive of our mission and so positive about the books they receive, but they are also just some of the kindest people, because as I mentioned in that last podcast, I had mentioned we were about to have a baby. So many of them in the weeks and months after we had Isaac not only wrote about our shelves, but also always mentioned, how's your family doing? How's the baby doing? And now I'm in communication with so many people about new babies coming into their families. I mean, it's just, I just want to thank you so much for having me on, and thanks so much to all of the One Bad Mother listeners out there who are also part of the Our Shelves community, because you really have been really the heart and soul of our first founding year as we learn how to do this.
Yes, I
so
love
cool.
the community.
I love it.
So
we do have the best
we
listeners.
Do. We really do. Tell us about what you've learned in the first year. What's come out of this first year? Have you seen an increase in, you know, books? I got to be honest, when you first came on, I was like, I wonder how long this can go, you know, like, because there is such a limited selection and or it's incredibly hard to find, right? Like it may be out there, but as Teresa and you have both said, how you search for stuff like that sometimes. So how has this first year gone? What's the response been? Do you already see an impact? Tell us about it.
So, I mean, I think the first year is really a reaffirmation of why we have this dual mission. So as I mentioned, you know, the first part of the mission is us connecting these books to our members. And you're exactly right. So Teresa spoke about what I spoke about last time, which is why books that are sometimes less focused on the identity can be hard to find. And then there's also the issues of some of the presses, whether it's a foreign press or whether it's a small press, just don't have the marketing and distribution networks to reach people. So us serving that connecting role is really important. And so one example of that is, as I mentioned, with my own family type, it's really hard, really rare to find a book with a main character with two moms from a major American publisher. And so we found a book came out last summer from a small Canadian press called Nimbus about a multiracial two-mom family. Beautiful book, Exploring the Beach Together by an LGBTQ author. But this was kind of the perfect example of this systemic failure that our shelves is here to kind of address. So this was a small Canadian press, and the book was not being distributed in the United States. But we knew our members would want this, so we went to the Canadian press, got the book, delivered them to our members. We became the first in the United States to deliver this book to our members. So that's an example of us. I think the first year has been a lot of learning and having firsthand experience in how hard it is. I think we said it was hard. We knew it was hard from my kind of being an everyday parent consumer looking for these books. But now doing the work of the curating and distributing and all of that, that's an example of how there are real systemic failures in place that prevent families, teachers, libraries having access to these books that we're trying to correct. But then, I mean, this goes to the advocacy piece of our mission is also really important. And one of the things that we've tried to do is we are buying our books directly from the publishers and trying to build relationships with the publishers. So we could go to a distributor and kind of get all of our books from the same distributor. But if we can build relationships and communication with all of these different publishers, we've bought books from about 20 different publishers so far. I think that relationship building is really important to the advocacy. So an example of that is I was speaking recently to a Canadian publisher, and they were telling me about some books that they thought would be good fits for our shelves. And at some point in the conversation, I asked, and do you have any books that include LGBTQ characters or families? And they said no. And that was a moment of education and advocacy and action. We asked them, you know, what would it take to get them publishing these books? We learned about their submission process. They said they preferred Canadian authors and illustrators. So I immediately wrote to the LGBTQ and other Canadian authors and illustrators I know and suggested they start sending manuscripts to this publisher. So I think there's, you know, there's so many different aspects to the advocacy piece. Those are some examples. And then we've also just tried to be there, like Teresa's incredible book, It Feels Good to Be Yourself. We're so excited. I mean, this is such a special book to be able to support books like that and extend their reach, or When Aiden Became a Brother, which came out in June, to be able to be there when books are first coming out and support them. I think it's also really important sending a message to publishers that we will be here when you create these books. But it's been fun. It's been really, really fun here in the first year.
I love you. Like, there, as you're talking, I'm just looking at Teresa, and I'm either making a face like, what the fuck? How are there not still, you know, books in the United States representing the LGBTQ community? And then when you say, like, oh, the Canada's got it, but America, well, just, ah, I'm, like, so I'm making those stinky faces. Then I'm making the, like, oh, faces where you're, like, asking. And then you reach out to the different communities to say, get your manuscripts in. I just think you are doing some good work. And like, I just want to say to anybody in the publishing industry that's listening, because I know we've got them, connect up with our shelves. If you've got books that you think need to be out there, or you've got somebody that you want to put out there, but you don't know where to start putting out, ta-da, here she is. I just think you're doing such a good job.
And also, yeah, if you need something good to get for your kids or somebody else's kids for Christmas or
Hanukkah, whatever
you celebrate,
yeah,
or any time of year.
Anytime, birthday.
Literally any time of year, because it's a subscription. And the boxes come quarterly, right?
Yep, they come quarterly.
Yeah. And my family has been a subscriber for the past year, and we're continuing going forward. And we have loved every single box that we've received. We have enjoyed all the books. So this is a really great way to spend your money in a smart and thoughtful way.
Yeah, you could even get a subscription for your school library. Look at that.
Yeah.
I'm like, actually, like, that's in my brain right now. Tell us all, how do we subscribe and what are our choices?
So you can go to www.ourshelves.com and you can subscribe. As Teresa said, there are quarterly book boxes, and you can choose whether you want 1, 3, or 5 books per box. And you can also choose based on the age of your child or children. And you can also get one-time gift boxes. You can always contact us. We're happy to answer any and all questions. If you want to make sure you get It Feels Good to Be Yourself, Teresa's book, in your box, because different boxes have different content depending on age. Feel free when you sign up. You can also just email us and we will make sure that book gets in your box. But yeah, we are so grateful to this community and Teresa for creating her book and being part of the book creation process, and for Biz and Teresa for just holding this conversation, and for all of the listeners who have been so incredibly supportive for ourselves in our first year. We really wouldn't be where we are without you.
Yay, Allie. Thank you so much for not only all of your advocacy work pre our shelves, but being able to, you know, focus. This is a lot of work. I mean, it's not just, I think about like the energy and the effort and the work of, you know, asking questions of the publisher and then reaching out to, say, for example, the Canadian LGBTQ, you know, communities, different communities. And so, that's a lot of extra legwork. And I that is so kind and generous of you. And thank you for continuing to do this. And congratulations on more kids in your house. And we just hope you have an equally successful next year.
Thank you all so very much.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Pick up the phone when you I call. Art is moving now, no longer stone. When you I call, hand reaches out with a will of its own. When you I call.
Dead Pilot Society brings you exclusive readings of comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Patton Oswalt.
So the vampire from the future sleeps in the dude's studio during the day and they hunt monsters at night. It's Blade meets the Odd Couple.
Adam Scott and Jane Levy.
Come on, Corey. She's too serious, too businessy. She doesn't know the hokey pokey.
Well, she'll learn what it's all about.
Busy Phillips and Dave Koechner.
Baby, this is family.
My Uncle Tell, who showed his wiener to Cinderella at Disneyland, is family. Do you want him staying with us?
He did stay with us for 3 months.
And he was a delight.
A new pilot every month, only on Dead Pilot Society for maximum fun.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal. And all your questions will be asked and answered.
You're welcome. All right. That's enough of that.
We got this.
So let me reemphasize,
mm-hmm.
Our shelves.
Yep.
Go there.
Yeah.
Ourshelves.com. If you are not already supporting them with a subscription, be it a one-time gift box or any of the subscription packages they offer, this is an absolutely good time to do it. I am so touched and proud of our community of listeners for jumping on this when we first had her on. And I would just love to see that number of One Bed Mother listeners grow that are supporting this. If you are a librarian, if you are a publisher, there are many things that our shelves can offer.
I also want to add that for those of you who are looking for more books featuring two mom families,
yeah,
that book that Allie mentioned, we have that book because we've been getting their books, and it's called My Mommy, My Mama, My Brother, and Me. And it's just an absolutely beautiful book. Like, my kids love it. I love it. It's a really soothing bedtime story, but it's also got a lot of like nature and learning in it. It's a really good, I'm really glad she brought it up because
yeah,
it reminded me, like, it's a really good example of a book that I would never have found or brought into my house if it weren't for our shelves. But now we get to enjoy this book.
Yeah.
And I'm just very grateful for everything they're doing.
I actually like the fact that we are kicking off the high holiday season,
yeah,
with some real kindness and awareness,
yeah,
and gratefulness.
Yes.
I'm okay with that.
Me too.
Speaking of things I'm also okay with, let's listen to a mom have a breakdown.
Hi, this is a rant.
I have two children, and my 11-year-old daughter is very picky right now. And this morning, I tried to embrace her pickiness and allow her to pick what she wanted for breakfast, so I made her cream of wheat. And it came out of the microwave, and she informed me the cream of wheat was not cooked to the consistency that she wanted it. And so the cream of wheat went into the garbage after several attempts of adding milk and re-microwaving it. And then for lunch, she told me she wanted ramen because ramen is the thing to bring to school. And so I cooked up some ramen, and I told her, you know, don't put any broth in the hot pot thing, pitcher thing, and because it'll make the ramen noodles soggy. No, Mom, I just want a little bit of broth. They'll be fine. And when she came home from school today, I said, how was the ramen? You were right, Mommy. It was soggy. I threw the ramen in the trash. And then for dinner, I asked her what she wanted, and she said she wanted the leftover barbecue chicken pizza. So I heated up the leftover barbecue chicken pizza, and I put it on a plate, and I put it in front of her, and she picked up one piece of the chicken, and she said, this chicken is dry, and it doesn't taste like barbecue. And so for the third time today, I threw a meal in the garbage for my 11-year-old child. I have just had it with her being unhappy and just unable to be pleased. And I felt like I needed to rant about it. And so here I am. Thanks for this hotline, and you're doing a great job. Bye.
You're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those. I mean, I like and don't like this call, mm-hmm. right? Like, because one, we think pickiness ends someday.
Yeah.
And horror upon horror, it might not.
Right.
And that's like, what a thing to like have to live with when you're trying all the things you can to like be accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then there's that feeling of, man, I ain't going to put any, I mean, I don't mm-hmm. know. My feeling would have been like, here's yeah. your empty plate.
Yeah.
Right. But some of us may not want to teach lessons to our children like that either. It's so frustrating. We've talked about this with younger children about how it ties into like our guilt of, I can't feed my kid. Mm-hmm. My job is just supposed to feed my kid and not, you know, that guilt. Plus, oh yeah, when you're making lunches and making dinners and making breakfasts all the fucking time mm-hmm. and maybe you're president of the grocery shopping. Yeah, there are days I do not like throwing. I don't ever like throwing yeah. food away, but it can touch a nerve.
I don't like making.
I don't
the
even like
food.
Making.
And
the
so
food. Yeah.
the fact that it gets not eaten.
Yeah. Is insulting.
Is really rough.
It's rough.
Really, really rough.
Because I feel like it's definitely one of those things where if you are an outsider listening mm-hmm. or seeing this, it is definitely a, well, I could fix that.
Yeah.
Like, where are you supposed to go with this?
Yeah.
Because it's just a lot. No one wants to hear their kid doing this.
Right.
Right? And especially when you're like, well, what am I supposed to do to fix this?
Right.
When maybe nothing.
Yeah.
Because maybe your kid's just really picky and going through a phase where they're talking like,
yeah,
like, this is what this I sound like currently, and that's hard.
Yeah,
I'm just
or the response is like, well, then fine. She doesn't eat anything, and it's up to her to like fend for herself. But like that doesn't acknowledge number one, harm has still been done. You still feel like crap because you still prepped food that went into the trash.
Yes.
Secondly, like a lot of our kids are not making healthy choices.
Yeah.
And so we kind of do still need to be involved. And if you just let your kid fend for yourself, I mean, at a certain point, sure, maybe you will just for your own mental health. But like, it doesn't solve the problem to say, fine, you can just have Cheerios for dinner. Like, you don't feel good at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is a the main point.
I also
suggest here.
I just want to share that I like that you used the hotline.
Yeah.
In such a precisely perfect way.
Yes.
This is one of those things that only we parents will understand.
Yeah.
And that it's so easy to be judged about or just have people say, I don't want to hear this. Why would you be telling me? This isn't anything.
Yeah.
And we know that it's something.
Oh, it's something?
Yeah.
And we know that this is, that you're not failing.
No.
Right?
We know that you're amazing.
Yeah. This is a thing that's happening in your house, and it sucks on multiple levels, and we understand.
Yes.
And we do not judge.
Nope.
There is no judging.
Nope.
I think you're doing an amazing job.
I do, too.
You are.
Yeah.
Okay? Teresa, what did we learn today? We learned that apologizing may have more to it than just saying, I'm sorry, or a Patsy Cline song. It also reminded me how much work we do every day as parents, because I think there is, like you were saying, yes, guys, apology. I think apologies are important. I have one foot in old school and one foot in new school.
Yeah.
You say you're sorry, you look somebody in the eye, you accept that apology, but the moving on and the why are we apologizing and acknowledging and accepting that sometimes we do things that hurt others and that we can learn from that and all the feelings that surround both sides of the apology are really important and require work.
A lot of work.
Oh, God, it's so much work. I'm so tired of work. I do not want to work anymore.
It's not an excuse to do a bad job.
Right.
It's like, I feel like something we've been dancing around that is really, like, key to this, right? It's like, we are human, so we do make mistakes. And apologizing is a helpful part of the healing process after we make those mistakes. But then we kind of need to show good faith and try again and try harder. Like, if somebody just does the same thing over and over and over again and they just keep apologizing, that apology means absolutely nothing.
Correct.
By like the third or fourth time.
Yeah.
It's done. We're done here. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh. We also learned that diversity is good. That was a dumb thing to have to learn. Big surprise.
Yeah.
Everybody is doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And it's a time of the year when everybody's got a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things that are triggering. A lot of things that aren't happy. A lot of things that maybe are so happy we're stressing ourselves out.
Mm.
Everybody is walking around with a lot. And just like with what we take away from speaking with somebody like Allie Harper about how easy it is to just assume these things are already out there.
Mm-hmm.
It is really easy to assume that everybody's having the same day that we're having.
Yep.
And that's just not true. And that everybody's kids are different.
Yes.
And I feel like this is something we don't talk about enough either.
Yeah.
Your kids are different than someone else's kids.
Yes.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
And that, accepting that and seeing that and really using that as a mantra, I think really helps us get through our interactions out in the world, as well as beating ourselves up or giving a side eye to somebody else. We don't know.
Yeah.
So let's just try to be fucking nice to each other, everybody.
Let's be generous,
generous
with our assumptions.
Yes. You guys, you're doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
I mean, for real.
Yes.
And I see you. Teresa sees you. We see you. You've got this. You're doing it. No matter how great or shitty it is, you're fucking doing it. Teresa?
Yes.
You are doing a really remarkable job.
Thanks, Biz. So are you.
Thank you. We will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, our producer, Hannah Smith, our husbands, Stephen Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org/OneBadMother. For information about live shows, our book, and press, please check out OneBadMotherPodcast.com.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Well, Daddy Baby Bussin' By got low down mama blue. Oh, said Daddy Baby Bussin' By got low down mama blue.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.